Was here and the board is all here. So I think the next thing on the list is client assistance programs, CAP, and complaints and issues.
Okay. There were two CAP, I'm sorry, there were four CAP cases in this past quarter. Two requested a new counselor, and a new counselor was assigned to the individual. And then two were related to JAWS scripting and employment settings. We resolved those two by contracting out for the service. So that was handled.
Okay.
And there aren't any more that are pending right now.
Okay. So that's it?
Yep.
Well, you got any questions about that?
I do have a quick question.
Yeah.
Okay.
When there's a like if somebody requests a new counselor, is that done just after all everything else has been worked out, or is it just done usually to keep everybody happy, or is there a certain policy on that? Or?
I won't say there's a policy per se, but we would want to have some discussion to try to, you know, figure out whether there's some, whether it could be resolved differently. But on the other hand, we wouldn't delay the process in that effort. It's obviously a lot trickier if the situation is, say, in Scott's Bluff, where you're a long ways away. But we, in the bigger offices, we generally will just figure out what the situation is and then go ahead and make an assignment. And it doesn't happen very often either.
And I'm not being critical. I just in 28 years of teaching, I know that these things do happen.
Yes, they do. They do. Sometimes it's personality differences, communication issues.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else? Okay, we're going to move on to statewide needs assessment survey.
All right. And we do have the final report from Mississippi State, who conducted the surveys. I compiled some notes from some of the major findings and sent that. Did all of you receive those notes?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. I thought I would just hit a couple of the top things and then see what discussion you'd like to have. 20 people, or 42%, participated in the staff survey. 16 people, 42%, were in the status 28 survey. And for the status 26 survey, 19 people, which was 40% of that group. And then the transition responses, 30 people, and that was 41% of that group. So it was kind of good that of all the groups, it was, you know, right around 40%, a little more than 40% of each group that did participate. And some of the non-participants weren't because they refused the survey, but because they couldn't be reached. There were a number where they had an old phone number and got back in touch with us, and then Dottie sent updated information. So I do know that, you know, they didn't just try the first contact info we sent and give up. We did a couple of different times update information for them. So anyway, I guess with the staff survey, I'll just read a couple of the top three on each group, I guess. For staff, these top three areas are where 75% or more of the people, the staff responding, reported a critical or moderate need for improvement or expansion. These are in order of importance. First, number one was improving placement services by developing and strengthening relationships with local employers and community organizations. Number two, improving outreach to unserved and underserved consumers. And number three, enhancing services in rural areas. then with the closed, unsuccessful group, the results were listed a little bit differently, so I guess I can't give you the top three. But 15 of the group, all except one person, was currently unemployed, which makes sense because they were closed unemployed. Only 20 to 33% reported that they received job search assistance or job placement. A small percentage said that they received assistive technology, and the majority of the group stated that O&M or cane travel and then low vision aids and devices were substantially more helpful than anything else that was provided by the services. And then also instructions in daily living was considered very helpful by the majority of consumers who received it. Now, 57% reported that they needed but did not receive low vision aids and devices, training in computer technology, and assistance in exploring different career options. So I think those probably would be the top three of things that people said they really needed and didn't get, and this is the unsuccessful group. Then with the successful, the status 26 closures, the report says at the time of the interview, 58% were employed, but in the 42% that reported being unemployed, four of those were closed as homemakers. And of course, the rehab system has independent homemaker as an employment goal. So actually, you know, those four who were homemakers should be included in the group that were employed. It's just, you know, I think most people, you ask a homemaker, where do you work? And, you know, the tendency is, or are you employed? If it's a yes, no, the tendency would be to say no, but I'm a homemaker. So in terms of our officially sanctioned closures, 78% were employed. And let's see. Of those that reported being unemployed at the time of the survey, four of those had been closed into competitive employment. So then apparently had lost that employment or decided to leave that employment after that for some reason. Now, very few, just 16 to 21% of those surveyed with a successful closure said that they received job search assistance or job placement services. That might be something we want to look at more carefully. Some of the most commonly received services were assistive technology, cane travel, training in assistive technology, and help connecting with successful blind people. So those are commonly received services for the successful closures. Just a couple of top points from this transition survey. A majority were not in school or working, and of course transition goes up to age 26, so you wouldn't necessarily expect all of them to still be in school. Almost all who were in school were attending college. And 11 of the 37% said that they were employed, and then an additional 17% were looking for work. The only obstacle that a majority believe they will face is transportation. One-third or more of the people believe that barriers will be employer attitudes, attitudes of peers and other people, and then handling blindness issues on the job or at college. The services most used by transition age consumers, mission services, were funding for school or training for work, summer programs for students, counseling and job seeking skills. They were asked to rate their confidence. Most of them did feel very confident in dealing with situations, getting around in new locations, working, living on their own, and so on. So that's good news. And when asked about their greatest need from the commission, a large percentage, actually, I don't know if I would call this large, but that was their wording, 30% mentioned funding for college or technology, 6.7% mentioned employment assistance. So, and this was an open-ended question, so there were a lot of other things mentioned, like ordering books, getting oriented to campus, getting materials in alternate media, and so on. And 67% said they would need help in all of those, the books, the campus, the media, and getting assistive technology were the four big areas that the majority felt they would need help on in the future. So that's kind of the summary. I guess we can, we'll certainly be using this as a working document for some time to, as we evaluate or plan what programs we're going to be doing, or if there are, I get, one of the things that comes out is something we're already doing, and that is putting a lot more emphasis on the job placement and job development areas. And as we mentioned earlier, a lot of training is happening in that respect. You know, in a sense, some of this confirms things that we already thought we needed to be improving, and we're working on it. I think that we need to also take a more closer look or read the entire document a number of times from different angles to see if there are some things that are we're falling through the cracks that we need to be putting more attention to.
Well, I was happy to hear that most people did respond to it and stuff. I think that's 40% is pretty good.
Yeah, that is good for surveys.
Does anybody have questions
or insights from your reading of it? I mean, I really would welcome, and even if later you read through the entire thing, any insights that any of you would have, I would really welcome your thoughts, your questions, your ideas.
How often did RSA make it known that we should have such a thing?
Well, the Rehab Act requires every 3 years. And what I've always said in the reports that I give to RSA is that we don't do a $30,000 survey every 3 years, but in fact what we do is ongoing, and we always have, and we're in fact even increasing it now with public forums and surveys, you know, the telephone surveys after closure or after somebody leaves the center. Now we're going to have even a more intensive, as a person is throughout the rehab process, that they'll be being interviewed. And so in a lot of ways, that ongoing approach, I believe, is more effective than every 3 years paying somebody to do a big survey. But I also think periodically it's a good thing to do a survey like this from an outside source.
Who will do this? The surveys, the ongoing surveys?
Say it again.
Who will do the ongoing surveys?
Well, we already do that. We have a reader that we contract with who is outside the commission, but also understands our, you know, what we do and our terminology, telephones. Everyone a certain period of time after they leave the center. We also do a similar thing after a closure. And then we have and always have had these little print cards of are you satisfied with services and would you recommend to a friend, you know, that type of thing. Satisfaction surveys, we've done that for years, and we continue to do that after closure. And then with the older blind program, Bob has a whole system that he does as well that goes beyond that simple satisfaction survey, but it's not necessarily a telephone survey, is it yet, Bob?
No.
No, just a, it's a print or thing that goes out to people. So does that answer your who? Some of it's by the mail, some telephone.
Yeah.
Some.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know that we contracted out with the reader to do those.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. The ones that you get, the evaluation after center, that are emailed to all of you, those are the results of those telephone interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Hubert had a hand up. Is that okay?
Excuse me. I was just going to think, Bob, should I email to the board the two documents that you use for survey instruments?
If they want it. If they have an interest in it.
Yes, we would be.
I think, too, that would be
okay.
Anything that,
especially given this topic that the boards and councils meeting is.
Right. And copy me on that if you would, Hubert. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, the things that go out in the mail, I've raised this issue before, too, because, you know, there are times when if something goes out to people in print, it just goes away.
I hear you. Bob seems to want to address that. Is that okay?
Sure.
Bob? I can email those documents during the break, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, so I can just take care of that today.
Okay. We appreciate that, Bob.
What kind of feedback do you get, Bob? Our question was, with these mail-out-of-printed survey, are most of them, you know, especially sending them out to the blind people in general and or specifically and just surveys in general, you get very good. If they don't respond back, do you contact them and ask them if they saw it or?
No, I don't contact them back. It's, I do two surveys. One is for under 55. You know, that would be the Part B, my independent living program. And then there's another grant that we get for old or blind, and I do a different survey for that. We don't have very many people who receive IL services, relatively speaking.
Under 55.
Under 55,
right.
So, you know, I would say that perhaps we send out maybe 50 in a year, you know, if that.
Bob, do you know what the response rate is?
I'm trying to think, you know, I would say maybe 20. I guess I really haven't really calculated that. It's not as good as the survey that was just recently done by Mississippi State. But this is just, you know,
thank you very much.
How much does it cost to contract?
Well, I don't know
for readers to do
that. You know.
I just wondered if it's how much it is.
I can't tell you the amount for sure, but one of the reasons we're increasing the number of phone call interviews is because of the point that Barbara makes. And we've always been concerned about the issue that the print things that are sent out are just lost. And, of course, ignored and set aside and so on. All of them are anonymous, so we wouldn't know who didn't send it back to follow up. But that is really why we're changing the way that we're doing this, to make sure that we really hear from people, not just after they're done with services, but during, to see how things are going.
Well, somebody would know at some point with, you know, return address on it or whatever. But I do wonder, I mean, you know, because I think that the difference, or part of the difference anyway, in the response rate, according, you know, from the things that are sent out in print and the ones that were done over the phone, probably is that issue.
Madam Chairman.
Sure.
This is Hubert. Our work with Bob on sending them out, I enclose return envelopes that basically turn into anonymous because they have the commission's return address on them.
Right.
And then the address for mailing to is the commission address.
Oh, okay.
Once in a while, I will see where somebody has added
slapped on
their
return
address label to the backside or somewhere on the envelope. Mm-hmm. And some folks will sign or indicate a name on the survey instrument, but by and large, they do come back anonymous.
Right. Now, we have, on most of these, we do have an open-ended at the end asking, you know, and saying if you want to identify yourself, please do so, especially if they have an issue that needs some follow-up. So occasionally somebody will, but for the most part, they don't. But yeah, but if you send it out in some other format to people, that they might not use that either. So I really think the investment in the phone calls will be very worthwhile over the long run. And Bob has another.
Yeah, I just want to say that over the years, I have shared the results of those surveys with the board.
Yes, you have.
Right.
And we appreciate it.
So you do have the survey that I have been using up until now, but I do want to say that the survey to the older blind participants is under revision. And we want to change that survey so that we are asking questions that will be more of interest for state legislators. Because we want to go back to the legislators and let them know what we are doing and also document better what the need is. So for the survey that I will email you over the break here, at least for the older line, that's the last time you will see it. other than when I calculate the results of this current mailing. We just sent out another mailing.
Okay. Well, that sounds good because it is important. We got to keep the legislature funding this program for the older blind.
This is Hubert again. We sent out 69 for the older blind, and I think it was about 10 or 13 for the under 55.
Yeah. Okay. And that's for a 6-month period of time. So the entire year would be approximately double that.
And it's 126.
Okay, so we are scheduled to be at the meet and greet with family and friends for a half an hour. And the next item on the list anyway was lunch. I think we did that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a public comment between the survey and lunch.
Oh,
we need
okay.
To see if
okay, you're right. I skipped that. Okay, is there any comment from the public? Hearing none. I guess we will. I'm assuming we're going downstairs to
yes,
the commission.
The Lincoln okay. District Conference Room.
Okay.
Hey, Carlos.
Our yes.